R.J. Bomarito.
R.J., welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are, as promised, talking to R.J. Bomarito, the Director of Shareholder Communications at Santa Fe Gold Corp. So how are you this week?
Doing really good.
Good.
I thought I would address the shareholders, because obviously we've been through some pretty tumultuous times here in just the past few weeks. And,
yes.
And I know that there's probably a lot of questions and there's a lot of uncertainty.
Hand-wringing.
Because, yeah, and certainly there's been relative quiet from the company other than the fact that we announced that we've secured $10 million and then there's just been nothing since. But as a director of shareholder communications, I wanted to spend some time this month, if you'll have me back here in February.
We've committed to you every day, Monday through Thursday, for the whole month.
Well, good.
All right, come as often as you will. I'll put it that way.
Well, I think as we get further into this here, I may want to go further with it. I can be quite a talker when the right buttons get pushed here.
Well, this is a talk show, so you.
Yeah, and part of it is though I'm not used to being interviewed on a radio, so some of it is give me a couple of days to get comfortable here. But what I first wanted to start out with here is, well, first of all, a couple things. I want you to either interrupt me when you want to flesh something out a little bit, or ask me some questions that you think are pertinent. So, because I've got an agenda here, I want to cover quite a few bases here as we spend some time together. But I want to make sure that I'm not missing what may be a concern that I haven't addressed here. So,
you're a shareholder, right?
Yeah, and that's actually one of the first things I wanted to talk about.
I just want to say that as a shareholder, you know every concern, every thought, every question that probably any shareholder has. But if by chance you miss something, I'll break right in there and ask.
There you go. Well, I guess one of the things I wanted to do is, you know who I am. I'm, you know, Director of Shareholder Communications. But I think it's also important to know who I'm not. And I'm not sure that everyone is aware of that, so let's just cover a quick few bases here as a setup for our future conversations. First of all, I'm not an insider, and that is defined by being a shareholder of at least 5%. I don't own that much, although I do own shares. I am not a director. I'm not on the board. And for evidence of that, I think that the most recent announcement, which was a pretty big one, I didn't find out about it until I read about it on the internet. So I'm not being told anything ahead of time, and so I think a lot of times, folks who have who know me or who have access to me, they say, hey, you know, what's going on? And it's like, I can tell you what I've been told to say, and essentially that's what's public.
Well, now you've just clarified the fact that you're not an insider, and I'm doing air quotes. But by the same token, I think it's important for listeners to understand that you're not an outsider. And by outsider, I mean you're not some hired gun, some third party that was hired by the company to disseminate information. Your position was born out of your passion for the company, the story of the company, the foundation of the company, and you've been a shareholder, in fact, for quite a number of years.
That's correct, Dwayne.
So, folks, I just want this to be clearly understood, as opposed to a company going, all right, we need somebody to be a mouthpiece. Let's give this guy X number of shares to come over here and tell our story. That's not
right.
The way this unfolded.
You were
a shareholder for many years, and you and I and a number of other shareholders agreed that we needed someone to, in fact, do that, tell the story, while Pierce was doing what he has done very well, and that's build a solid company. And we need a spokesperson, and there you were. And here you
Great.
Are.
Yeah, that's a good segue into actually my next point, and that is, in fact, that I am not an IR firm. An IR is investor relations firm. Essentially, my background is I'm an insurance agency owner. I've had financial planning background. I've got a real estate broker's license. I have a pretty good understanding of financial matters.
You know a little bit about risk.
A little bit about risk, yes. Risk analysis, in fact, how to determine what the cost should be for a going risk. And so, I'm not a CPA, so if someone has questions specifically about the balance sheet and and the minutiae of the footnotes in a financial statement, frankly, I'll struggle right along with you to find those answers. But I have enough background in the area of marketing that I think I have a sense for what people are looking for. And just as you said, because I have because I am a shareholder, I have lived those very concerns. And the other thing I'm not is I'm not an employee. I simply have a short-term contract to essentially advise and coordinate the communication efforts. Propositioned appears in the board a few months ago, and they said, yes, I think we need this. The time is right. Obviously, we're on the threshold of some very major news, and really I'm just serving as a coordinator for this because Pierce has got his plate full doing all the things necessary to build the company. So essentially I do a
and you did it with the support of shareholders who off the top of my head probably do account for, I don't know, maybe 25%.
I'd say that's
of
fair.
The outstanding share count.
I'd say that's fair. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And there's specific express support. So anyway, I'm thoroughly excited about the opportunity. I am passionate about Santa Fe.
I didn't mean for that comment to sound as though there was some opposed to it, but I'm just saying that there was a group of shareholders who do represent that much that I know were very positive about you moving into this position. I don't know of anyone that's against it. There's no reason for anyone to be. So
right.
I'm just thinking about what I said. It was like, oh, okay, so 25% is Fort. There's nothing to be against. So anyway, I just want to clarify that.
That's good.
Go ahead. Sorry. I'll quit interrupting you.
Well, I gave you permission here, but I guess I just want to make sure that we do bring out to the shareholders what's our story here. I was especially encouraged by your previous guest. Of course, anyone who's listened to CFRN for any length of time knows Savant and his voice very well. But essentially, his comments, about how, I wouldn't be surprised if we see eye-popping moves, dramatic moves in gold and silver. Well, goodness, I could probably also spend quite a bit of time just talking about, the potential for gold and silver, and maybe sometime in the future we will. I'll spend this time together here this month on Santa Fe. But it clearly the reason that I am passionate about Santa Fe has to do with exactly what Savant was saying, was that there is a phenomenal debasement of the currency. I think that's a summary of just about all the stuff that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going on worldwide. And because of that, whether it be gold or silver or base metals or really any commodity, I would say that I'm especially bullish on commodities with a particular focus on precious metals, which have both the commodity element as well as the monetary element, and then to leverage that opinion, one would consider the stocks of a mining company, and to leverage that even further, one should consider the stock of a junior mining company, hence Santa Fe Gold. And so, I've held this position physically, in Santa Fe at Time Asco, for about 5 years, and I hold this mental position to this day, and I think that we've got a long way to go. A long way to go, not just in gold and silver, but in Santa Fe. And so that's a little bit of the basis I wanted to cover here first. One thing that I think I get the sense of, and I have had a similar concern, like, oh, why is it taking so long? What's going on? What seems to be happening? Why is everything postponed? Is I recently had an experience that I think will sort of bring out what I'm trying to say as far as why is it taking so long. And okay. This story is a personal story. In the past few years, my family, a member of my extended family, had a commercial building for sale. Now it's not some, 40-story high-rise. It's a 4,000-square-foot commercial building just outside of Detroit, and so we're talking about a $150,000 property.
Right.
And this had been on the market here in the Detroit area. You probably know the market's pretty tough.
Yeah.
And so it had been on the market for a little over 2 years or whatever, I guess 2.5 years now. Anyway, about a little more than a year and a half ago, we got a kind of call from a chiropractor who was interested in the property, and we talked to him, we showed him the property, we provided him with the tax bills, we provided him with all the utility bills. He did several inspections, he had his own personal inspections, and probably for 2 or 3 months he was, interested in doing this, but then along the way came a Yellow Pages contract for him that he had to decide whether he was staying or moving, and at the time I don't think he was ready, and he decided to postpone it. And then about 6 months after that, he again resurfaced and said, hey, let's talk a little bit more about this. And at that point, there were further inspections and there were further conversations until finally we got to the point where we received an offer from him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and this was a verbal offer, and by the time it was to the point that we thought, well, this is worthwhile exploring. From the time we received the verbal offer until the time we closed, another 2.5 months of going back and forth, of working out the details, the down payment, the interest rate, the terms, the conditions, there was some remodeling that needed to be involved, which had to be negotiated back and forth, the signage, getting a city inspection. And, of course, we had to have our attorney review it. He had to have his attorney review it. Well, thankfully, the story ends. We closed the property, and all is well, and he's making his payments, and he's quite happy there. It's worked out. All that to say that we spent almost a year and a half, probably about 15 months, negotiating, working, and involved with literally the sale of a $150,000 building. Okay, now, I think you see where I'm going with this, and the point is very simple, that, goodness, if it can take that long, and it does, and it did, if it can take that long just to wind up something as relatively simple as a building, how much more might be involved in, let's just say, starting up a mine?
Yeah.
I mean, and really, I think that seems to be the thing that us shareholders can lose focus on or lose sight of very, very easily, and certainly those on the message board in particular. And I'm not pointing at them. I'm just saying that they seem to express it, whereas maybe we just think it. And so it's like, what is taking so long? But in fact, there's going to be many more elements, again, than I could even enumerate here, things like the royalties, the arrangements, obviously the permits, the constructions, the engineering studies, the contractors. I think at one point, we were going to hire contract labor, and then we decided to actually end up, doing the internal construction ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Which right, becoming an employer.
Yeah. So then becoming an employer and going from, one to the other, and then ranging in a trucking agreement. And, just to enumerate the various steps, we could probably spend an hour, and that wouldn't involve actually negotiating each one of those. So I think what I'd like to, to simply close that point with is just say, hey, everything takes way longer than we all first expect, and if you really think about it, that's true in your own lives as well.
And you have to keep in mind, too, that the company has done everything that it's been able to do on a pretty limited budget, from acquisitions to build-outs to, it's one thing to get a mine open if you're, Rio Tinto or Goldfields or one of these bigger names where you have, massive amounts of cash. But I mean, folks, you didn't pay, in most cases you didn't pay $60. Nobody paid $60 for their stock in Santa Fe. You paid more like 60 cents. and I don't want to use the analogy of you get what you pay for. What you got was you got an incredible opportunity. You got in on, I even hate to use the term, I sound like I'm doing multi-level here, you got in on the ground floor. Well, this is below ground. Fair enough. Talking about a mine, underground mining. I mean, this company, where Dr. Pierce Carson has taken this company, with a few shekels he had to work with, in a relatively short period of time, we're just shy of being a major player in this space. Just shy of it. I mean, he deserves... we can all argue different points. Well, I think he should have did this differently, or I think he should have done that. You know what? Walk a mile in his shoes. He's brought home properties. He's brought home acquisitions. He didn't have much of a budget to work with, but yet he still brought home the bacon. And we're about to go into production. And
that we are. And that's going to happen soon here, and I'm not going to address that because I know nothing more than anyone else that we're just awful darn close on that. Can't be much more than a few weeks away is my expectation. I think another thing that I'd like to point out that about Santa Fe that is possibly confused, at least, and again, I use the message board because it's a source of, you know, what people are thinking without having to spend a lot of time on phone conversations, and certainly I haven't met 99% of those people personally. But one of the things that there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect is that it almost appears that many people consider Santa Fe almost as though it's a trading stock as opposed to a buy and hold stock. Now, as you know, Duane, I have a particular interest in trading. Christian Financial Radio Network is, I would say, has more focus on trading, mm-hmm. and I
right.
personally find it to be an important thing that I'd like to work more towards as time goes on. But frankly, I think that we need to clarify that I don't think Santa Fe is a good trading stock in the sense that you're trying to buy and sell on an intraday basis. I don't think there's enough volume. I don't think there's enough activity and spread.
It has none of the qualifications of a trading stock.
Right.
It is an investment stock. And you're right. We do here on the radio program, we do trade intraday, you know, to pay the bills, keep the lights on. But we invest to create a legacy. And it's where 97% of our investment dollars are. We've made no secret of that from the beginning. It is for us an investment, a long-term investment, one that we've held for a long time and one that we'll continue to hold because we see unlimited possibilities and probabilities in the future. And that is just our opinion.
Right. And I think I just wanted to clarify that because a lot of times some of the remarks seem to be addressed towards very, very, very short-term thinking, which indicates there's more of a trader mentality. And frankly, I think that if a person wishes to trade a stock, they should consider something different. Of course, they're welcome to trade it. There's no reason they can't. But it doesn't fit the characteristics. But I think that most of the remarks that I'll have this month will have to do with considering this stock as a longer term investment. In other words, we have a major commodities trend. Most of the commodities bulls are in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 years. 17 seems to be the number I hear most, and it started around 2001. So we're halfway through this, and so essentially this is a ride this commodities bull out through the next 7 to 10 years, whatever it takes. So I thought that those who make comments related to trading, I don't think that necessarily applies to us very, very well. And another thought that I wanted to convey here too was that this particular pullback, I believe, is done one thing other than many, it's done many things, but this one particular thing that I believe it's done has been most beneficial is that it has substantially increased the volume of trading per day. 5.5 million shares or so in the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 business days of trading or some fairly short number. Huge numbers. Now, that is really important for one major reason, and that major reason is that you have to have a higher average volume before you can even consider attracting institutional investors. Now, we can get a few in there, but in order to really get a fair number of institutions involved, the volume has to be higher. And it could very well be that this pullback, this increased volume here at this activity, I mean, what do we have, 400,000 shares yesterday and 200,000 the day before, and although today is fairly light, it's been, 300,000 or shares or more a day, I think will definitely give us that greater opportunity when we're looking toward the institutions to invite them into our story here. And it's simply because an institution has larger numbers to move, dollars, and they certainly can't move in and out if there's not enough volume. So I think that this pullback, aside from being another buying opportunity for those who are in agreement, would be, it could be that maybe the volume will stay at this level going forward, which is really a nice thing, and I wanted to point that out.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Now,
Now, I'm just going to say this about people that whine on the message boards. You know, my goodness. I mean, folks, here's the good news. Anybody that has enough money to materially impact the price of the stock is far too busy to be hanging out on a message board. So take it with a grain of salt, not trying to insult anybody, make anybody feel bad or less than. It's like a bunch of, I don't go there. I used to go there. I've owned a few message boards. In fact, I have one now that I don't even go to. But I know a couple people do go there and hang out. But my point is, on some of the bigger message boards, it's like a bunch of old women hanging over the back fence, you know, gossiping about this and about that. And, you know, on a good day, everybody's hooray. And then on a bad day, I mean, it's just, it'll if you allow it, it'll get inside of your head, it'll eat you up, and in the final analysis, it has no bearing, none, zero whatsoever, on where this stock is ultimately going to go and what progress this company will ultimately make. It's just a bunch of busybodies gossiping over the back fence. I'm sorry, folks. I know some of you are going to be offended. I can't believe he said that about me. Well, you know, I don't mean any harm. And, it's just a fact. And I'm saying it because not just with this stock, but so many people go out there and they get on these message boards and they read something that the guy owns 12 shares, you know. He's out all of $15 on this stock, and he's going to come on like an expert and make posts and do analysis, and people are going to flock to his feet like he's some kind of guru. The guy's got 15 bucks in the pot. I don't want to hear it, you know? So that's why I quit going to message boards years ago.
Also, it's so hard to tell what a person's real agenda is. It still is very curious to me as to who would spend their time on the boards bashing the stock. Because literally, either the person, as you say, has nothing to do and they think that's fun, or for whatever reason, or they actually do have a reason to be bashing it, because clearly there's people on there who are, you know, in favor of it, and their agenda is, we want to see the price go up. Let's get real. So why do in fact those bashers, in fact, are they secretly wanting to be large potential longs by driving the price down and scaring people out of their positions? I mean, who has the time to spend all that time making those disparaging remarks? I guess it doesn't cease to amaze me.
Well, and they come out in full force on a down day. But then when the stock runs up 20, 30, 40%, suddenly they vanish. So, you know, bottom line is, some people are just mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. It's like back in the day when you had the guy sitting around, you know, the Potbelly stove at the general store. Mm-hmm. There's always the one guy that you knew was lying. The other guy wanted to, you know, sound like a genius, like he knew everything. I mean, it's... You take all of mankind, all of human nature, you distill it around a potbelly stove, and then you shove it into a stock forum. and you've got all of those different characters in there. You know, the guy that wants to lie about how much he owns, the guy that wants to lie about, you know, the inside information that he's got, and the guy that's just plain mean-spirited. You know, he just wants to make everybody feel bad.
Okay, well, that I think is an interesting insight. Before I go, I guess one of the things I'd like to limit our conversations to, you know, the 30-minute range or so. Look, maybe we'll go a little longer today because this was a bit of an introduction thing. But I'd like to spend the rest of my time here reading a press release. And I'm going to stop and comment, sort of like okay. You know, Rush Limbaugh would do. He would start reading something and stop and comment, because I think it brings out many of the points that are important. And this one is dated September 21st, 2004. Yes, you heard me. ASCO, as most of you know, was the former name of Santa Fe Gold. ASCO acquires 2 million ounce gold property. September 21st, ASCO Mining, a U.S.-based mining and exploration enterprise. Stop. I think it's important to put into perspective this is not a Bolivian a gold mine. This is not a Venezuelan gold mine. This is not a South African gold mine. And I think you probably saw today's news. The South Africans are talking about nationalizing their mines. Or this is not a Russian gold mine. This is a U.S.-based mining and exploration enterprise.
Right.
With
a mine in the U.S.
With mines, yes. There's one, two. They have four of their five properties inside the United States. So, it's here in the United States. I was at the Chicago Resource Show, and I found it interesting that when I heard a couple of analysts discussing going out to various properties, one of them complained about how hard it was to get to them, and that's what I'm going to circle back to. And the other one was, oh yeah, I like going on those junkets because they're, you know, a couple days here and a couple days there, and then, you know, you get on the camelback, and anyway, it's just this long process to get up to a place up in the Yukon or for that matter, as I said, Mongolia or some far-flung place. Many hours involved. Someone pointed out to us how, as an analyst, how much they liked the fact that Santa Fe was, all you do is get on a plane, go, you know, fly down to Tucson, and within a couple of hours you're at the mine and you're at the mill, and then if you want to go out to the home office, which I would imagine is probably pretty Spartan, knowing Pierce, in Albuquerque, you could probably go there, but I think it's probably just an office, and so you can, and then you can get on your plane and go back home. In other words, within a day or two, you could see
right.
just about everything Santa Fe has to offer, and you're still within the United States, driving on, you know, I would imagine mostly paved roads, some gravel roads, and I think that's important to recognize.
No dysentery
involved.
Easy
to get to. Yeah, it's easy to get to. Then going on here with the press release here, with an emphasis on gold, copper, and industrial minerals, the owner of a large, high-quality mica deposit. I'm not going to talk a lot about that, but suffice it to say that we have a substantial mica deposit, and virtually every stock valuation that I have seen applied to Santa Fe here in the last couple of years ignores the fact that we have a mica deposit, which actually was the source of millions of dollars worth of income for a few years. And it announced today it entered into an option and lease agreement with Ortiz Mines covering 57,000 acres. That's approximately 90 square miles, and I continue to read, of mineral estate on the Ortiz Mine Grant, Santa Fe County, New Mexico. Under the terms of the lease, the company is required to make annual payments and to pay a royalty on production. Previous exploration and development work on the property by other companies identified 2 million ounces of gold resources in several deposits. It goes on to say, a preliminary feasibility study in 1990 on one of the two deposits, the Karachi and the Lucas Canyon, concluded that at a gold price of $385 per ounce or higher, it would be economically feasible to develop two open pit mines containing 1.03 million ounces of gold. Now, do I have to tell you the gold is almost 1,100 or is
it? Hey, I remember the day that press release came out. I was dancing in the street, man.
Tell me about it. It was amazing.
So for anybody out there that says it's taking too long, don't tell me about taking too long.
Well, actually, that does precede my my time, but it was nonetheless. I'm looking back here in the archives, and I thought, well, what a great place to start. And I think that I'm going to read a few more paragraphs, and I'm going to make a summary statement here, which I think you'll appreciate here. And it goes on. Historically, mines on the lease property have yielded some 350,000 ounces of gold, including 250,000 ounces from the Ortiz mine operated by Goldfields Mining from 1980 to 1986. Quote from Dr. Pierce Carson, quote, the Ortiz lease fits the company's strategic agenda of acquiring significant precious and base metal assets. It represents an excellent opportunity to acquire, under favorable terms and in the United States, substantial gold resources with demonstrated potential for production. Furthermore, the geology of the unusually large area under lease is highly prospective for several styles of gold deposits and offer superb exploration potential for discovering additional major deposits. From 72 through the 90s, several companies carried out exploration and pre-development activities on the property, and these included several which are listed here. Expenditures by these groups exceeded $40 million. At the Karachi Canyon and Lucas Canyon, approximately 386,000 feet of core and reverse circulation drilling was completed. Okay. Now, there's some important things embedded within this very first press release, by the way, that was posted on the Santa Fe website, santafegoldcorp.com. And I believe that it points out the philosophy that Pierce Carson has to further our shareholder interests. And that would be, number one, he looks for properties that are that have already had substantial work done on them in some way, shape, or form. $40 million back in the 80s is...
That's a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah. And so someone has done a lot of drilling, 380,000 feet. Okay, and so there's a lot of data. And to a geologist, this data is literally a gold mine. And
yeah.
So he will take that information and he will be able to utilize that information. So instead of, again, if you have to understand the mining business a little bit, instead of saying, well, gosh, we have every reason to believe that based on this outcropping or this rock formation that there's some, an ore deposit there, the first thing you do is you do some sort of a survey, and then you have to hire a drilling company, and then you have to have the drilling done, and then you have to interpret the results and assemble the data, and then if you think that there's more, then you do a pre-feasibility study, and then you do a feasibility study, and then you start to arrange financing, and I just described what could take 2 to 4 years, mm-hmm. And yet the Ortiz property represents a property that has already had a great deal of that done. So we shrink down, number one, the amount of time, which is crucial, to bring a mine into production. Some say it takes as long as 10 years. And it also shrinks down the cost involved, as well as it reduces the risk. So when you add those things together, I think what it does is it represents what, in fact, Pierce goes after. Mines that have already, ore bodies that already have substantial work that's been done, that have the potential, and they've possibly been abandoned because of economics or other circumstances. Obviously, as metal prices declined in the 80s, that contributed to some of those things that occurred. Furthermore, regarding the Ortiz, is that initially we leased 90 square miles. Now, again, if you understand what the mining business is, and by the way, that's on private property. It's something called a land grant, and I don't know if this article goes on to say that. It might point that out. But I wanted to point out that 90 square miles is a very, very, very large area, especially in the United States, or should I say in the United States, to actually put under your control. Mm-hmm. Because typically most mining permits and most mining leases are of a much smaller size, and I can't cite that, but I do know that they number in acres, not square miles.
Right.
And so
it's huge.
It's huge. It's fantastic. Now, I think we've cut off some of the, because there's an annual lease payment, I think we're down to, 62 square miles or 57 square miles. I know they maybe, sort of shaved off some of the edges that might not have that. But it's also on private property, which is another element that comes into play. It's part of something called the Ortiz Land Grant, which I know Pierce could tell this story much better than myself, but it simply is where this private property has the ability and the right to issue these underground, or should I, to issue the mineral rights to an entity, as opposed to having to assemble hundreds and hundreds or even thousands of small claims that would, extend over that large of an area. So you have something that's on private property. You have something that has been drilled extensively. You have something that $40 million, almost 30 years ago, has been already expended. You have something that is under our control with a relatively small annual payment. You have something that is in the backyard of the company. They're not going to have to travel 6 hours or 16 hours to get there. Ortiz is just a short distance from, from the home office. So they can have much better site control. And one of the reasons this property was acquired was because, as Pierce is able to do, he takes a look at the data from a different point of view. And if someday we get him on, we'll ask him to tell us the story of the mine he developed in Australia. He takes a look at the data from a different point of view, and he comes up with a different solution. And in this case, as you may know, typically gold is extracted through the use of cyanide, which it sounds like it's a bad thing, but apparently the sun actually destroys its strength. But nonetheless, it's generally not considered an exciting thing to be involved with. Well, the Ortiz property, because of the nature of the gold contained within the rocks, it can be simply crushed. And the gold falls out in flakes, and all they need is the equipment to crush it, and that's why it can be economically feasible at such a low gold price. And all they need really is just to start milling and crushing and essentially sifting the gold right out without having to go through processes such as the.
Now, is Santa Fe already in possession of a permit to mine the Ortiz?
There are numerous permits required to establish any kind of a mine, and I know that according to our most recent press release, one of the things that they wanted to do was to advance that Ortiz property.
Okay.
And so whether it be a permit by the Bureau of Land Mines or an environmental permit or a water permit, I mean, there's dozens of them, and I could not enumerate them, but there are many different permits required to bring a mine into production. They may already have some of them, but I can honestly say that they do need to obtain more in order to be able to commence operations.
Okay.
So you've got this, you've got a property of this magnitude and size on private property, which can be extracted from a fairly, environmentally friendly program, and the only thing you need is water. Well, water in the Southwest is an issue.
Yeah.
However, I've been to a few seminars and heard Pierce explain that he has made contact with landowners in the area who have deeded rights to sufficient water and have expressed an interest in supplying that water to us for a fee,
mm-hmm.
in order to process our ore. So initially, when someone looked at the Ortiz property, a geologist, they first of all thought, oh my goodness, that's a great open pit mine, there's a lot of ore there, but you go through the process of trying to leach it out with cyanide, and you've got all those environmental concerns, blah 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 blah, nice try, but not going to work. Well, Pierce looked at it and said, if we could do this with it, we could make it economically feasible, and that's what we have in the Ortiz property. We have a property which we have control, and we will, according to the most recent press release, which was just dated here when we obtained that $10 million, was to begin to actively either look for a partner or to some sort, or to actually put that mine into production. So going back to the very first press release, which was effectively the only real property of any consequence that, that ASCO, now Santa Fe, had, we see several things. First of all, we see Dr. Pierce Carson being very, very consistent. Here's a man who has simply set out, you know, 6 years ago to do, and he, I think he joined ASCO before that, 6, 7 years ago, he had a stated mission, and he's not deviated from that mission. Now, Duane, you've probably had experience with people who you begin to, you know, they begin to launch a project, and you check back with them a month or two or 6 months or a season later, and you find out that they've abandoned that project and they're on to something else, and then, or the one that they're working on, the story keeps changing. But right. Not with Pierce. This man is said, oh, this, no, this is what we're going to do. We're going to develop this mine. We're going to, we're going to crush it and mill it and go forward. And very, very methodical, very, very consistent, and very, very creative. So I wanted to use this first press release to sort of point out some of the characteristics of the man that many have come to know and many do not know, who is really building us a phenomenal company, and that's today's story.
Very good. Well, we appreciate it. We appreciate the time that you're setting aside for this. I mean, it's of importance to any number of people, and to have you as a conduit of information, as a way of, you know, keeping people abreast of what's going on, the reasons behind it. I mean, you brought out some things today, really important that, you know, someone new, a relatively new shareholder, it's things they may not even be aware of. And the magnitude, I mean, when you talk about $40 million being spent so many years ago to determine what actually lies in the belly of the earth, then along comes Pierce years later, when gold is trading at, you know, 3 to 4 times that price, and suddenly everything's economically viable. I mean, what a sweet place to be,
yep.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
So we certainly appreciate you being on the show. Any questions that shareholders have for you, I encourage you, send an email. What's your email address?
It's R.J. Bomarito. R-J-B-O-M-M-A-R-I-T-O, R-J Bomarito, at santafegoldcorp.com.
And if you didn't get that, you can always email me, ct@cfrn.net, and I'll be happy and I'll be happy to put the question to R-J when he comes back on the show. So that's it for today. Thank you so much, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right, have a great day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, friends, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back to wrap our day up with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com.
How many names?